Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ultra Crap, podcast aiming to abolish the idea of good and bad taste in music, because it's about time we give credit to music in general. On today's episode, I am delighted to have singer-songwriter James Wrighton from the UK. He has just released his second solo album called Jim, I'm Still Here. It came out last July and it's a beautiful piece of work. You may have heard of James Wrighton even before that, let's say, when he released his first solo album, The Performer, back in March 2020. There is a lot to say about James Wrighton's musical life. He's done many different things, but the thing that stands out every time is that he's got a certain sense of class and that he's not afraid of experiencing different types of music. You'll see. So, as I said, James Wrighton is the kind of artist who's always been keeping busy. I'm thinking it might be interesting for you to remember that you most certainly heard of him from his former band, Klaxons, back in the early 2000s. Here, for example, you can hear in the background the tune Golden Scans from the album Myth of the Near Future. His last solo project, Shock Machine, was created in 2017. Then came out The Performer, the first album he released as James Wrighton. Here you can hear his eponymous single, which came out 2 years later, back in 2019. And now, in 2022, James Wrighton released his second album, Jim, I'm Still Here, on which you can hear this beautiful single, Billy's Party. Hi, James.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. It's great having you on here.
Total pleasure.
So, it's pretty simple. I just need you to tell me what your crap is today.
What the track is? It's Ryan Paris, the Dolce Vita.
We are walking like in a Dolce Vita. This time we got it right. We're living like in a Dolce Vita. Gonna dream tonight. We're dancing like in a Dolce Vita. With lights and music on. Our love is made in the Dolce Vita. Nobody else than you.
What is it about this song that makes it so dear to you that you want to talk about it today?
Well, I think it's really good.
Thank you.
It's a really good track. I found it. I think I probably always knew it, you know, because it's quite a famous song. So I probably always heard it. But a while ago, I think probably 2 years ago, I was DJing in Italy, and I asked Dave and Steph from Soulwax, who I work with. If they had any good songs that work for Italian audiences or any kind of a like a a couple of tracks they could recommend. So they sent over this like 5 or 6 track playlist on Spotify, and I yeah, I think track one was probably Ryan Paris's La Dolce Vita, and it probably listened to it in for the first time properly, you know, sat down and had to listen to it, and I just thought it just blew me away. It just made me want to dance. I thought the production was so good. I thought it was it's just a really good track that shouldn't work, and there's so much about it that is not wrong, but just, you know, borderline a little cheesy maybe, you know. But it works. It all comes together.
Yeah, it's funny. So you actually discovered it like only like 2 years ago, right? Because I did my research and I realized that you were born on the same year that this song was released. So
no.
Yes, you were.
You're kidding me. It was meant to be, wasn't it?
I know. So
that's nice.
Yeah, I was just wondering how and when you came across it for the first time. But yeah, you just reply to that. But that's funny because like only 2 years ago it is pretty famous, so you never came across it before.
Yeah, no, like I definitely had heard it, do you know what I mean? I definitely had I'd heard it somewhere because I knew the song, do you know what I mean? But I'd not really listened to it.
Yeah,
like, you know, it probably was somewhere in the background forever. Yeah. You know, like it's a really famous song obviously, but it was always but it was when I you know, when you stop and actually give it time, that's when you're actually listening. So then I was able to listen to it just a little deeper, you know, and kind of actually appreciate it for what it is.
Makes sense. Yeah.
But
so if it's such a good song in your opinion, why do you think people consider it crap? Like, because I'm pretty sure some people do think it's crap, but why would they think that?
I mean, we're talking about a very mute subject here as to what is, you know, subjective and what people think is either crap or cheesy, or, you know, it's not really a question that it's really hard to answer, because it's like for one person's opinion is equally as valid as another. It none of that really matters, because what really matters is whether you feel something or whether you're moved or whether you enjoy it or not. Or so it's a really tricky one for me to say, because I think that, I don't know, maybe everyone loves this song. I don't think there should be any haters. But if you like just listen to Radiohead, then maybe this isn't your cup of tea. You know?
Is that your case?
I like Radiohead. I mean, but equally I like Ryan Paris and his song La Dolce Vita.
But like, yeah, is this song actually really different to what you're used to listening in general?
Yeah, I don't listen to La Dolce Vita when I, you know, to unwind. But I've listened to it a lot. I've just got back from a holiday in Italy, actually, and I had it on my summer playlist. And every time, and it's really funny this, because I played it in the car, and my kids are in the back. And after I played this one, my daughter Edie, my eldest, was like, oh dad, can we have that song on again? And she got obsessed by it.
Awesome.
So it's obviously doing something right. and also it's like I was really impressed that she gravitated to it. I was like, that's really cool that you like this one. I thought there's something really, that's really I was like, yeah, go Edie, that's great, good taste, excellent. Because it's like I said, it's got the production of it is pretty amazing. When you actually, I mean, the thing is, if you listen to the track, the things that probably people would say are cheesy about it are the kind of the topic and the vocal delivery, you know, because it's very like, it's got a bit of like swagger or a little bit of a, you know, obviously it's easy. I mean, the whole thing around it is quite interesting, is that, you know, his name is obviously, he's Italian, obviously. Yeah. Because he sings with an Italian accent. I don't know a lot about him, but he sings with an Italian accent. You know, it's quite strong, but he's also got, he sings in English with an Italian accent.
Yeah.
And certain words sound a bit English and a bit kind of almost London, but then he's obviously Italian because you can hear it. But his name is Ryan. I don't think this is his real name, obviously. But
it can't be.
It can't be. But he's decided to call himself Ryan Paris to give him some kind of exotic flavour.
True.
So it's it's, if it's anything, it's, but he's singing about the sweet life, La Dolce Vita. So the whole thing is like, that's the thing that's kind of, I mean, again, some people might say a guilty pleasure or cheesy, but I would say, but it's definitely not boring. It's interesting. He's made some very strong choices. You know, he's called himself Ryan Paris. It is interesting. He called himself Ryan Paris. He's singing about La Dolce Vita. He sings in a, like an English accent, kind of Italian accent. He's got a bit of a swagger charm about his delivery. And also, he's actually, because I did look at the album, because I thought, oh, I wonder if there's any other tracks on this, the album that this track comes from, of note. And it's actually an okay album. There's a couple of good things. Nothing is quite as elevated as La Dolce Vita. But on it, there's a track called Harry's Bar.
Mm.
Now, Harry's Bar is, this is on the same album as La Dolce Vita. And I think there's another track called like One Night in Paris or something, or like, so there's a real interesting...
He's obsessed.
He's obsessed with something, but he then strikes me as like of a man of, an international man of like pleasure, or like, he seems like, you know, if he's frequenting, Harry's Bar, if you don't know, is a very famous cocktail bar in Venice.
Right.
Which has a very like illustrious history of like the Hemingways, and everyone's drank at Harry's Bar, you know, it's like,
okay.
Has a peach Bellini cocktail, which everyone goes to Harry's Bar to have. So it just, the plot thickens, you know, we've got Ryan Paris from, I don't know where he's from. He's probably from Bologna, who's singing about La Dolce Vita, who's also frequenting Harry's Bar and wanting a night in Paris. You know, like this isn't Radiohead.
Yeah, know? Yeah. Yeah, but still, he sings in English. But yeah, I was wondering, like, if that guy was actually that obsessed with Paris that he would call himself that. Because in the music video for the Dolce Vita...
I've not seen the music video.
He's in Paris, having a great time in Paris.
there we go. I mean, that it just, the plot thickens even more. I didn't know he'd been to... I've never seen the video, and I didn't know he'd been to Paris, but...
You're missing out.
What happened in Paris? You know, like what? It's just, the whole thing is amazing. It's just, when you just try and, like, I don't think we've got long enough to really go into enough detail on what's going on with this. Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, so he was in Paris in the video. So it's a bit of budget to fly out to Paris.
But that's the only thing though, because he's literally just in Paris, like on his own, and there's nothing really going on.
Amazing. La Dolce Vita. Wait a minute. I haven't analysed the lyrics really. I've never really liked. Mm. I actually, the main thing I really like about it, I mean, it all works as a song, but I really love the production of it, and the synthy 80s track. It's really interesting. The sonic palette that he uses. I don't know who produced it or who wrote it with him, or if it was just him on his own doing this. But there's a great, the drums sound great, the synths sound amazing. They're really warm, lush, like sparkly. They're like pretty, it's pretty good, you know, like it's up there. I don't know, it's hard to beat that sound.
That's the reason why I think this song is actually really interesting, is because like you've got this weird bridge, like this synth bridge that lasts for like 1 minute or something like that. And I was not expecting this kind of like thing like happening in this kind of song, you know, because it's supposed to be like so simple and so obvious, and then at some point you've got this bridge that is so weird, but at the same time it's kind of...
But have you got there's a version of it that might not be talking about the same version. The version I've got, it's about 6 minutes long.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It's got the like 2-3 minute instrumental like build section before he comes back in with the riff.
Exactly.
Again, I don't know. I'm guessing that isn't the single version, because, you know, unless it's like he big ballsed it and went to the radio and said, this is my Bohemian Rhapsody, you know. Yeah. It's got to be 7 minutes long with a 4 minute instrumental break, or it's not I'm not releasing it. I don't know. It's interesting. I mean, the whole thing is just really fascinating, isn't it? You go, it's a really, really beautiful song. The melody's great, the spirit, it works. Probably shouldn't work, but it works.
Obviously, you as a musician have experienced like different types of music, whether you're in a band or on your own. Even like your first album on your own sounds so different to the one you just released, I think. And it's funny because,
yeah, it does.
Tell me if I'm wrong, but your second album, the one that just came out, seems to be your work that's getting closer to that song, Dolce Vita, if that makes sense.
I'm getting there. I mean, hopefully I'm there. Hopefully I'm getting there. I'm getting edging. I'm edging closer to my Dolce Vita, you know.
Plus you went to Italy, so.
Yeah, I went to Italy. I've been to Harry's Bar. I mean, I like the idea of maybe James, I changed my name to like Jim Bordeaux or something. I think that.
Don't do that.
I think that's got.
Please don't.
I think that's got quite, Jim Tourcoing, you know. I think that's a, they're like more, even more niche.
You know your geography though. Good.
Oh, I've been around France.
And so yeah, I was gonna say, if you discovered it like 2 years ago, do you feel like it actually affected you like on a professional matter, or is it just something that you appreciate like that?
No, it's just a bit of a, I guess it goes back to that guilty pleasure thing, doesn't it? It's just one of those like tracks that I listen to and I just think it's great, and it just doesn't, I don't think too much, I don't go too deep into it, you know. Usually I don't, I just, it's in the background whilst I'm cooking, or I put it on in the car and kind of, it actually puts a smile on my face.
Yeah.
And my daughter's face. So that's important, isn't it? That's what, you know. It's doing something right. That's a good sign. If music makes you smile, then you're winning.
Yeah, that's when you know you've got something special going on with a person. Yeah. Well, obviously she's your daughter, so obviously she's special to you. But the fact that she likes this song that is so particular, that must have been nice.
Kids might like it. I don't know. Maybe it's a pretty like accessible, friendly song. You know, it doesn't really like. There's nothing scary. There's nothing anything like atonal or kind of. It's all pretty kind of saccharine. It's sweet. Like I said, those synth lines are really sweet and beautiful, actually, I think. And they kind of like hook you in, and they're interesting. They never repeat too much. You know, there's little synth lines that come in and out and don't really bore you as a listener.
Yeah.
So that's really kind of interesting about it. And the bass is great. You know, the bass line's really, really great. That's what kind of instantly captures your... captures you, you know, you kind of hear that bass line and then this like plinky noise, and then the key riff comes in, the down, 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 you know,
yeah,
and then step it, you know, and then welcome to the stage, Ryan Paris, you know, who doesn't disappoint, does he really?
Do you actually have a thing like for the 80s then, like in general?
No, not at all, really, like quite the opposite. Like, I've never really,
Really? You've worked with ABBA recently.
Yeah, I did. They're like, I guess they were, they did go until the early 80s. And I do like certain of their kind of synth heavy tracks. Mm. I mean, you know, the music I listen to in general is 70s music. You know, if I was going to put anything on,
all right,
I always go for mainly, you know, I grew up listening to, you know, the bands, you know, my musical, the period when I was like music was the most important to me as a listener was in my teens, so it was 90s, so it was like I was very much a child of the Blur, Oasis, Pulp, Radiohead, Britpop period, right. You know, so that's what I grew up on, but that's not what, you know, I never listen to any of those bands anymore because I just feel I know them all so well, you know, it's never like I go back to that,
right?
You know, I'd never sit at home listening to 90s music, like I said, I think I because I just listen to it. That's what I listen to all the time. But weirdly, 70s music is the thing that I always listen to, really, because it's such... I don't think there's any better period of decade in terms of music production and songwriting and decadence. And, you know, I think it had it all the 70s. But I don't dislike the 80s. And like, I do like... The reason I made this album the way it has turned out is really because of the situation that really kind of... Like, I wouldn't, like, it's only because I made it in lockdown that I had, I didn't have a, like a live drummer or live drum kit I could play, or like, I had just like the synths around, that I've always had synths in songs, you know, since I started with Klaxons, but I was able to just kind of lean more heavily into those, really.
Right.
And, you know, that's the kind of world that Solwax work in as well. So when we were kind of sending, that was, you know, that was, and there was something exciting when they would send me records to listen to that I'd never heard of from the 80s. There was like a certain few records that, especially these YMO Sakamoto records and this Japan record, that suddenly was like, oh, I really like this type of 80s music, which is not the like you know, this is no diss to Aha take on me, but you know that yeah. when I think of the 80s, I think of like, you know, that kind of stuff.
Or yeah,
like,
yeah.
And that's still, and it's all really good music, but it's not the music that I'd like want to make personally, or make, or like interested me enough to go, oh, how do they do that? I want to make something like that.
Mm, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Whereas the stuff they were sending me was more like, someone sent me I did an interview the other day, and I got a review. They really nailed the genre of music that this album is. They called it mechanical funk, and I was like, "That's so right." I thought that's a really precise.
Yeah, I get that.
It's a really good. Yeah, I get like because it, like I think it is a really funky dance-driven record.
Mm.
Personal, very like very personal. It's not like a get up like it's not like a funk record where I'm just singing like get up and dance and like. You know, like have a party tonight. It's a very yeah. personal, weird record, you know, lyrically and thematically. But the drive of it is funk, and but not in a kind of American black way in terms of humans playing in a room funk. It's a very robotic, probably more computer funk, you know, which I think that is really what the kind of genre of this record is, really.
Totally, yeah, makes sense. And this is a question I like to ask because I feel like I feel like this is hard to answer this, but I think it's really interesting. What I like to ask musicians is, do you tend to like make music the kind of music that you like to listen to, or do you just make music you want to make like in an independent way compared to what you're used to listening to, if that makes sense?
Well, I think you have to make the thing that, well, I don't know. I think the hardest thing about music is finding your thing, finding, I hate to say it, like what's true to you and you're like what you're,
well, you know, said you're it. Like,
yeah, I just said, I hate to say it, but I just said it, is that like, there's no point in me trying to be, I don't know, like Oasis. Or I mean, there's no point in me trying to be, I can't think of, Ed Sheeran.
Right.
Or like, I'm not going to be, because these people exist and they have a voice that is their voice. The way I've always saw it is that I try to write music that is, from the most kind of pure version of what I want to say and put out into the world, like my story, you know, and that's the key, really. And talking about what sonically, like that's the, like the story, that's the, like every album you make, what the personality of it is, or like the voice, or like the way you know, like the way I sing is the way I've always sang. I've never, you know, and I probably went as a teenager, tried to copy without realizing it.
Yeah,
the people that I love, you know, because that's how you start. You start by imitating, and then suddenly you gain your own voice, which I hope, as you get older, just becomes even more pure and becomes even more distilled into your thing, which then is even harder for people to say it's other than you. You know,
true.
So that's what I think in terms of, you know, the message, the voice, the personality of the music. But then the kind of genres that you know, I've made a lot of records now, and I don't think I've repeated myself, because the main thing when I do go about making an album is that it's got to be a fun learning process where you kind of do new things, so because otherwise what's the point, you know, because you're not going to grow in any way.
Yeah, definitely, you definitely did different things every time. Yeah.
Like I wouldn't ever know how to do the same record. I would get so bored by that. Like this, each one has to be like this album for me, this one that's just come out, was just like, oh, I've never made a record just on synths and like leaned heavily into drum machines and like old, I've never done that, you know, I've always I've never done that. So it was just felt like quite exciting to try and make a version of that. And of course I hope that when I make music, it's music that, well, you have to like it, because it's like you're making it. And you can't sing it every night, and it's, you know, so yeah, you know, although I don't go home and listen to my albums every day, you have to, when you're making it, you have to be in it and listen to it again and again and work so in a detailed way, you know, that you have to, it would be impossible to do if you didn't like it, you know.
Yeah, definitely. That is a quote that I really like by Stanley Kubrick, who said, well, I can't really quote it like perfectly, but he said something like, you can't release a film unless you think that's the best film that you like ever made, in a way, because that wouldn't make sense, really.
It wouldn't make sense. You can't go into it thinking that you've made something. I mean, and also because like when you make an album or write a song, you know, the ones that the way I work is that the ones that I finish are the ones that I really like and I go back to again and again and I've worked into and, you know, and I, by the end of it, I hope I'm not deluded in thinking that they're good, you know, but I might be, but like you have to kind of go with your gut and go like, oh yeah, I think I'm into this, you know, and then, and you know, like this, I work with Soul Wax, who, you know, again, I think, They told me they like it and they were into it and they wanted to work on it. So I was like, well, they're not wrong, I'm not wrong, then we put it out into the world. And whether anyone else cares or not, that's not something that I can control. So there's like, you make it, you put it out, and like fucking 10 people might like it, 1 million people might like it. Like those things, it's just like impossible to try and, you'll go crazy if you try to control that.
Let's say you've got the occasion to go and see Ryan Paris play live. Would you go?
Like Ryan Paris in 1983?
No, right now.
That might be fun. I hope it'd be in... If it was in Harry's bar, or if it was in Paris...
That would be perfect.
If it was Ryan Paris, one night in Paris...
With your daughter...
Now we're talking. Get the Eurostar over, a lovely meal. Like, we got like front row seats for Ryan Paris at the Olympia or somewhere lovely.
That's the life.
That's the life. And you've got the, especially with the, I'm hoping live he does like a 20 minute version. You know what I mean? Just keeps it going.
I'm sure he would do that, definitely.
He's got to milk it a little bit. It would be awful not to.
Yeah, you're right. Do you get this feeling? I don't know if you got the occasion to go to gigs much because of COVID, but like, I know that personally, when I go to a gig and I don't actually really care about the band, or if I think that the band is great, but I'm not having a great time, but being surrounded by people having a great time actually makes me having a good time. Do you think you could have that at a Ryan Paris gig?
Well, get swept up in the audience having a great time, and then I'm having a great time. Well, I mean, I'm already having a great time because I'm there with my daughter watching Ryan Paris in Paris. I mean, there is nothing better. So there's no, I wouldn't care if I was the only person in that room or just my daughter and I.
Yeah, so basically it could be just him playing in your living room just for you and your daughter.
More than happy if he wants to do that.
A bit awkward though.
Slightly awkward and slightly creepy. And I don't know if like, I would probably kind of be that kind of overly enthusiastic host to make sure that Ryan's happy and he's fed and he's drank and he's like, you know, and he's like comfortable, and I could see that getting quite awkward. And it'd just be like, just play the song and get out of my living room, please.
Please.
It's just too much. Ryan, go back to Paris or Bologna or like wherever you're from. Unless you're wherever, I have no idea, but I'm so, thanks for writing that song. I genuinely think though, if it was the 80s, like seeing him at some kind of Spanish resort, that's what I'd like to do. You know, like a Marbella, you know, Brian Paris in like Alicante, you know, like, on the beach, and there's like the sun is setting, everyone's got like a Aperol spritz in their hand or something, you know. It's like everyone's at a table. It wouldn't be the way I can imagine seeing Ryan Paris would be at there'll be tables. It's like plasticky crappy tables with stains on them, like a Aperol spritz in a plastic cup, and like, and there'd be nothing, it won't be like a posh crowd, like it won't be something fancy, it won't be like a mosh pit, it'll be very much like, you know, sun setting, everyone's in vests and shorts, everyone's having a nice time, we don't need too much, you know. Dolce Vita comes on and then we're just living the good life, you know. It's the sweet life is, it's there, you know, that's all we need.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. It sounds great. So you want this Italian guy to come to Spain and sing in English about being in Paris, basically.
Yeah, but this Italian French guy, this Italian guy who's obsessed with Paris in Spain, playing to a load of Brits abroad. For me, that would be the most... Just that, I don't know what, in the 80s, so it's 83, it's my birthday. We might throw that one in as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because you're the same age as this song anyway. So.
My family have surprised me on the day that I'm born in Marbella or Alicante, and they've surprised me by getting Ryan over from Bologna.
Brilliant.
To sing about Paris. Fantastic.
Awesome. Sometimes I've got guests who come and tell me that they don't know how to choose their crop so they can tell me about it. So what I usually tell them is imagine yourself putting it on at a party with all of your close friends and your friends are like, just like, stop this music, it's crap, we don't want to hear it. Do you think that if you actually played this music with your friends, they would actually enjoy it?
They're not my friends if they don't enjoy Ryan Paris.
A bit extreme.
Quite obviously. Well, I think as you get older, you have to choose your friends wisely. And, you know, it boils down to little details like this, whether they're into it or not. Dead to me. You don't like Ryan? Go back to fucking, I don't know, wherever you're from.
That's funny because that's the answer I usually get when, because like most of the time guests tell me about a song that they loved back when they were a teenager and they still love it, you know. And they're like, but when I was younger, I would define my friendships regarding the kind of music that I would listen to and all. And I know that I was the same. Like, if you didn't like the Beatles, you couldn't be my close friend because I thought that.
Same. Tribalism is a great thing. It's great for music. I actually think it's so healthy to be like that because it just, you know, means you're passionate about something.
Yeah, you think it's actually relevant then.
Yeah. So it always should be about gangs and, like, you know, your clubs and, like, you're into, like, the thing. You want to consume it and know everything about that. And, yeah, so it's just the way it has always been, and that's great. Yeah, I was a bit like, I was as a kid that was all metal for me. I was just, like, loved metal. And like heavy metal and like if you weren't like wearing black, reading Kerrang and like into metal, then dead to me. And it's funny now because now I'm into Ryan Paris, and if you're not into Ryan Paris and wearing a vest, probably neon, and then again you're dead to me.
What an evolution.
It's funny, isn't it?
What do you do? Because like you said, you were a big fan of Blur and Oasis. So what do you do if you meet someone who loves Blur but hates Oasis?
Well, they're both... back in the day, obviously, it was hard to love both. I remember I was an Oasis fan first, and then I got into Blur. And I kind of kept it a bit of a secret, you know, for a bit.
Cause it was really?
Yeah, I can't like both because, you know, that's not supposed to be, you know.
Yeah.
And then obviously I drifted more into the Blur camp and left the Oasis camp. And then I was a fully fledged, like, you know, big into Blur fan. What was the question?
I was just saying, like, now that you kind of like both bands, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
What's going to be your reaction if you meet someone who's...
Oh, like fond of God.
Blur, but who hates Oasis?
God. Oh, grow up, get off, get over yourself. you're too old for that.
Yeah, it's see, like, so you can actually appreciate someone who doesn't agree with you.
Yeah, or you'd say, "What year is this? What? Why are we?" You know,
is it 1984?
Okay, 1984. Are you into Ryan Paris? I mean, it was okay at the time when I was, for some reason, but I was like 12 or 13. And in hindsight, you're like, what's that all about? Why would the I don't know if that I don't think that happens anymore, really, that a nation gets wound up in this, like, one versus the other kind of battle of music. I don't think so. That seems like so dated now, doesn't it? That, I mean, it was, the NME was really, really, and the media were really, really, that was the thing, wasn't it? They wanted to wipe, you know, build it up, and both bands benefited in the end.
Yeah.
Because there was a lot of chat. But I don't think that really happens anymore, does it? Don't know, maybe there's slagging matches. I thought, actually, yeah. In rap, I think there are, aren't there, occasionally?
Yeah, you're right.
I know Beyonce and Kelisa, did they have a little thing recently? But that was maybe that was different. It was different, wasn't it?
Yeah, I didn't really know, because, like, I personally know that I'm a Blur fan and I don't really care about Oasis. And when I tell people that, they just don't really care anymore.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're just like, either I'm wrong or right, but it's not like we're going to actually get into a fight. Unless they start playing Oasis, then I'm just leaving. But yeah.
I mean, you can't really, I mean, it's hard with Oasis because you can't, I don't know. I was really into them as a kid. And, you know, they've written songs that everyone sings and knows, obviously. And I've been at parties where I've been with the friends and everyone's singing Champagne Supernova or something. And, you know, they're part of, like, I don't know, they're like bread or cheese, or, like, you know, they're so everywhere, those songs, aren't they? I can't be passionate about, but I don't know, as you get older, like, I can't still be as passionate as about Oasis as I was when I was 10 or 12. Yeah. You know, it's hard to, do you know what, in fairness though, it's quite hard to be passionate about any music in that intensely once you get past the age of 16. You know what I mean? It's really hard to kind of, like, still, it would be kind of weird if I was still as passionate about a band.
Awkward.
When I'm at 30, yeah, slightly awkward at 38 when I'm like, hang on a minute, there's probably more important things, like feeding my children.
Raising my kids, yeah.
Raising my children in a proper way so that they can grow up to appreciate Ryan Paris, you know, and live La Dolce Vita.
So, do you think you would have actually liked Dolce Vita as much if you hadn't discovered it when you played it, like, in Italy, or if you didn't go to France that often? Do you think that actually has a role to play in your love for this song?
I think you're right there. I love Italy. I mean, like, so Italy's my favourite. I mean, who doesn't love Italy? I mean, you know.
True.
So you're kind of like, so if there's a song that kind of makes you somehow feel, again, the irony is, it's, I mean, okay, the title's the Dolce Vita, but it isn't a very Italian track, but it makes me feel, it makes me have that warm feeling that I get from going to Italy or thinking of Italy or eating pasta, you know, or drinking lovely red wine from Italy. I don't know, like, I think that, I don't know, it's funny coming to it when the way I came to it, because it was like I said, it's always been there probably in the background.
True.
And then coming into it like a couple of years ago in a different way, it's kind of an interesting relationship I have with the song.
Yeah, definitely. But I'm guessing it's the same thing with everything, really. Basically, like you said, that you were really passionate about Oasis growing up, but maybe that was because, like, I don't know, I don't know you personally, but yeah. I'm guessing that as a teenager, when you're listening to this kind of band who comes from nothing, from misery and all, it just makes more sense to love them when you're that age. And obviously, you can still like Oasis, but it's not the same thing.
Yeah, no. I quite like the idea of, like, I wonder if anyone loved Ryan Paris in that kind of way that people loved Oasis. Do you know what I mean?
That would be hilarious.
Who was Ryan Paris's, if he was Oasis, who was his Blur, you know?
Yeah, but, like, for example, do you think, like, someone from, like, Norway, where there is no summer, for example, would someone from Norway actually listen to Ryan Paris?
Well, yeah, because maybe I think more so, because there's something about the escapism in Ryan Paris's world. I mean, there's nothing. That's what I was, when you said he was in Paris in the music video, I was quite shocked. I thought the whole thing was some kind of a fantastical escapist world, you know, like And the thing would be that he'd never actually been to any of these places. It was just all in his bedroom, which I love. You know, that would have been amazing if he'd never been to Paris.
Or
he'd never been to, like, or he was from, even better, if he was from, like, Birmingham in England. You know, like, that wouldn't surprise me. And he'd put on the accent. He'd, like, given himself a bit of the exotic. I mean, that would have been amazing.
Oh, shit. So I actually ruined it for you.
Kind of. But I mean, because I like the idea of this guy being he is a bit of a mystery, you know. I don't really know enough about him, but I know that he's written a really good tune.
And yeah.
It's just like no one could come up with this now. You know what I mean?
I know. Well, maybe it just... Don't check it out then. Don't watch the video.
I'm just going to leave it. I'm going to close my eyes forever.
You're right.
I just think of Ryan in Malaga with my daughter in 1983.
Singing in English about being in France.
Being in Paris. I love all that stuff. I don't know. There's something so... It is really... I mean, I'd say I'd be, you know... This is quite a good... track for the brief, isn't it? If I'm being completely you know, I don't want to big myself up anyway, but I'd say this is a pretty good episode, isn't it?
It is great, obviously,
because you're getting... Would you be able to find a track that fits the brief even better than Ryan Paris's La Dolce Vita?
That is an excellent question. Well, it's, you know, kind of a challenge for the following artists.
Oh, well, yeah, I think the bar's set quite high now, isn't it?
Yeah, I know, it's tough. Maybe I should just stop the podcast now.
I think, where'd you go from here, really?
Yeah, you're right, you can't get any better than that.
No, because everything else is like... Because the thing is, it's good, this track. It's what it comes down to. It's like, really, it's not a guilty pleasure. Because the track's great. But there's a whole world around it. That's the guilt. That's the, like, the wrongness of it. That makes you go, like, that's all wrong. I wouldn't want to get it. Like I said, if you were a Radiohead fan and you're like, hey, if I'm a Radiohead fan and my friend is a Radiohead fan, I am not going to go to my other Radiohead fan and go, hey, mate, you've got to check out this new song by this guy called Ryan Paris. He's an Italian guy singing in English about La Dolce Vita, but he's obsessed by Paris. My friend who listens to Karma Police every night isn't going to go, yeah, that's great. That sounds right up my street. He's going to ditch me. He's going to say, what? Do you not like... But what about Kid A? And I'm going to say, yeah, but this is kind of like Kid A because it's got synths and it's like electronic and like... It's just not Tom York. It's Ryan from Paris. And even better. It's cool. And he knows it. And he's no irony. He's just very sincere. And he's just an escapist like you. You know, he's just a fantasist.
Yeah. Plus, like, there is absolutely everything in this song. Like, I just said the synths, the whole atmosphere. But you said you didn't really pay attention to the lyrics. But obviously,
no,
I did.
People should... No, we should all listen more.
It's like he's having a great time. He's like singing to his lover that they live in the Dolce Vita, and that is great. But at the same time, there's a bit of melancholy to it because it's like it's kind of the last night we have together. So let's enjoy it. So it's kind of sad in a way.
Do you know what? Actually, I do remember the lyrics. So what is quite weird is because there's in the chorus, he goes something like, "Say you're gonna leave me now. Say you're gonna love me now." I think he changes it.
Yeah, because that is really clever. Really loving, clever. Leaving.
Yeah, right?
Sounds the same, but it's kind of different at the same time.
Yeah, so you're going to leave me now. Also, because he's saying, say you're going to leave me now, so you're going to love me now. So he's in that position where whoever this person is, he loves them, but he's also like, what have they done? You know, maybe his life's better off without them. He's in that, like, love-hate. Yeah. It's actually, there's even more going on than I thought.
I know. Yeah, he's kind of like in this vulnerable position, I feel like. Yeah. He knows for sure that this is going to end, but it's not like he can really do anything about it. We're dancing like in the Dolce Vita with lights and music on. Our love is made in the Dolce Vita, nobody else than you. It's our last night together with our love again, another light before we drown in darkness. Say you'll never leave me now. Say you're going to love me now.
It's amazing. It's going to drown. Because I know La Dolce Vita. I've not seen it, but I know La Dolce Vita is a very famous film. Italian film, I think, right? Is it Fellini?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Probably.
It probably is. But I don't know whether that's the story of the film is the inspiration to the lyrics to this song. Probably, I'm guessing.
Yeah,
so I'm guessing,
probably.
You know, so maybe that's what he watched. So there he is at home in Bologna, and then on BBC 4, whatever the Italian, Canal Plus, I don't know, what the Italian, RTE, is it RT? RT1
BBC
or whatever.
Quattro.
And BBC 4, suddenly, this Italian film comes on, and there he is, Ryan, in his pants, you know, and he's, I don't know why I put him in his pants, but...
I don't know.
He's now in his pants watching a film at home. Maybe it's like late at night and he's just flicking and there's like,
yeah,
Fellini's or whatever, La Dolce Vita now. And then he just gets inspired and writes the words. And then he goes in to the studio where his mate Dave's got like a copy of GarageBand or whatever it was. And then out comes this beautiful song about this film. And then he's got like, well, you've got, your name is a little bit too, you know, I don't know his real name, but I'm guessing it's not Ryan Paris. We need to change your name. So they go Ryan Paris. So they, you know, so before he knows it, he's like glamour, exotica. Mm. He's like Simon Le Bon, you know,
yeah.
He's like.
Exactly.
You know, which I don't know, actually, that just came. Simon Le Bon, like, is his name actually Le
Bon? Is it?
I don't know, but is that maybe that was a thing in the 80s? Because I know Duran Duran were obviously in 80s, 83 feels like peak Duran Duran.
Mm.
So maybe he wanted to add that bit of glamour to his name. And
possibly, yeah.
You know, I think the 80s, there was that period where I think a lot of artists did kind of want that international jet set glamour thing.
Yeah, yeah, totally. So yeah, Ryan Paris's actual name is Fabio Roscioli. So yeah, nothing to do with Ryan Paris.
Is it actually? Is it actually?
Mm.
What's his first name?
Fabio.
Fabio what?
Fabio Roscioli.
So, an amazing name. Do you know what I mean?
It sounds great. He should have stuck
with
that.
Yeah, he should have, but I'm glad he didn't. Because otherwise,
Ryan
we'd have nothing
is
to
so
say.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
All right. Well, pleasure speaking. I hope you live the Dolce Vita.
Yeah, you too. Thank you.
Pleasure.
Speak soon. Bye.
Bye.